Shivajadarahuchu. The inhabitants of Vijayadhara Loka pray. Vidyam. Mystic formulas by which one can appear and disappear. Pritak. Separately. Dharanaya. By various meditations within the mind. Anuradham. Attained. Yasyedat. Stopped. Agyoha. This fool. Balavirya-triptaha. Puffed up by bodily strength. And his ability to conquer anyone. Saha. He, Hiranyakashipu. Yena. By whom? Asankye. In battle. Pashuvat. Exactly like an animal. Putaha. Killed. Come unto him. Mayana Singha, appearing as Lord Nrsingadev by the influence of his own energy. Pranataha, fallen. Sma, certainly. Nityam, eternally. Translation, the inhabitants of Vidyadhara Loka prayed. Our acquired power to appear and disappear in various ways according to varieties of meditation was banned by that foolish Hiranyakashipu because of his pride in his superior bodily strength and his ability to conquer others. Now the Supreme Personality of Godhead has killed him just as if the demon were an animal, unto that supreme pastime form of Lord Nrsimhadeva. We eternally offer our respectful obeisances. So you can repeat, the inhabitants of Vidyadhara Loka prayed. Our acquired power to appear and disappear in various ways according to varieties of meditation was banned by that foolish Hiranyakashipu because of his pride in his superior bodily strength and his ability to conquer others. Now the Supreme Personality of Godhead has killed him just as if the demon were an animal. Unto that supreme pastime form of Lord Nrsimhadev, we eternally offer our respectful obeisances. So there's no purport to this text, so we're going to read the next text with its purport, and then we'll comment. Text 47. Shinagu chu yena, yena papena ratnani, shri ratnani ritani naha, tadvaksha patanena sang, adatananda namostute. The inhabitants of Nagaloka said, the most sinful Hiranyakashipu took away all the jewels on our hoods and all our beautiful wives. Now since his chest has been pierced by your nails, you are the source of all pleasure to our wives. Thus we together offer our respectful obeisances unto you. So purport by Snavang Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. No one is peaceful if his wealth and wife are forcibly taken away. All the inhabitants of Nagaloka, which is situated below the earthly planetary system, were in great anxiety because their wealth had been stolen and their wives kidnapped by Hiranyakashipu. Now Hiranyakashipu, having been killed, their wealth and wives were returned, and their wives felt satisfied. The inhabitants of various lokas or planets offered their respectful obeisances unto the Lord because they were relieved by the death of Hiranyakashipu. Disturbances similar to those created by Haranya Kashipu are now taking place all over the world because of demoniac governments. As stated in the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the men of the governments of Kali Yuga will be no better than rogues and plunderers. Thus the populace will be harassed on one side by scarcity of food and another by heavy taxation by the government. In other words, the people in most parts of the world in this age are harassed by the ruling principles of Haranyakashipu. So very nice. So, Om Ganati Vrindasha Ganjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yenatasmai Shigarve Maha. So in the first verse we find the inhabitants of Vijayadhara Loka speaking about how they acquired their particular position. It's very interesting. Both Vijayadhara Loka and Nagaloka are very nice places. Vijayadhara Loka is higher and Nagaloka is actually lower than the Earth planet. In Nagaloka actually there's no sun. But they have something to substitute for sun, which is the light of the jewels of their head. They're Nagas, they're snakes. There's very interesting stories I'll tell about them in a few minutes. But anyway, the point is that they get to be in these places due to something called sadhana. And because they have sadhana, they also have a sadhya, which is the goal. Just like we have in our Krishna consciousness movement, we have sadhana. Sadhana means basically the practice or the activities that you execute for a particular purpose, and sadhya is the goal. So both of these types of living entities, the Vijayadharas and Nagas, they have a particular goal. And of course, their goal is to enjoy in specific ways. The Vijayadharas, of course, is described, the Vijayadhara ladies are extremely beautiful, and they dance and everything like that. Something like the Apsaras, who dance. And the Nagas, they enjoy also, as described here, with their wives, and they enjoy becoming very powerful. So these are different things that people enjoy within this world. So what is the activity that you have to perform to become a Naga or a Vijayadhara? And that's generally meditation and austerities. And great austerities too. Just like I mentioned here, the varieties of meditation were banned by that foolish Haranyakashipu. So, in other words, one has to be very much goal-oriented in order to execute austerities. And we were talking about this last night in the program we had, that sometimes in our Krishna consciousness movement, people do things without being goal-oriented. Of course, we shouldn't want to go to Nagaloka or Vijayadhara Loka or any of these other places, or Brahmaloka or Indraloka. But we sometimes, or in many cases, we do things because we just have a habit of doing things. And we don't question, you know, why we're doing things, you know, what is the purpose, what is the goal of doing things. And we actually become, in this way, disconnected from the activity itself. Disconnected means we're doing it for some other purpose than the goal of the activity, or what's supposed to be the goal of the activity. We're doing it because we have to. Just like if you're a brahmachari in the temple, of course, not too many brahmacharis, you don't see any. Oh, what? Okay, sorry. So, just like where I come from, Fiji, I'm actually from Fiji, you wouldn't know it by seeing me, but brahmachari is a rare species, endangered species. So we have rules to protect them, because there's none of them. So, just like if you're a brahmachari living in the temple, if you don't get up in the morning, probably, if it's a strict temple, they won't let you eat prasadam. Or in one temple I know, they make you, if you're late for Mangalarti, write the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra something like 100 times or 1,000 times. So, what that does is it actually disconnects you from the goal. Actually, when you have a punishment or reward that is not connected with the goal, I mean, even with children, for example. Let's say, I always give the example that when I was young and going to school, I had very, very good grades in school because my parents would give me money for getting good grades. Every time I got an A, you know, there's $5. Of course, $5 then is equivalent to $50 now, because that was like, God knows how many years, like 60 years ago. So therefore, it disconnected me from the goal. I was actually connected to the money, not the goal. So when you use rewards or punishments, it actually works like that. So in Krishna consciousness, many times we find that we're doing things just because either we have to, we're in a habit of doing things, or we won't get prasadam if we don't do things, or we feel guilty if we don't do things. I mean, we have a variety of reasons for doing things or not doing things. We follow regulated principles because, you know, we don't want to go to hell, we don't want bad karma. We read about the punishments in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's pretty scary, isn't it? Like if you drink liquor, you get to have molten lead poured down your throat. The Yamadutas, they're not the kindest living entities you can imagine. They take joy in torturing you. So these are not really good reasons for performing bhakti. So what should our reason be for performing bhakti? Of course, Prabhupada gives us an intermediate reason. He says, you know, we should want to get out of the material world. And Lord Chaitanya also gives us that reason. Ayananda tanuja kinkaram patitam mam vishame bhavambudo. He says, I am your eternal servant. Ayananda tanuja kinkaram patitam mam vishame bhavambudo. But I'm stuck in this horrible material world, so please get me out. You know, the desire for liberation. So that's an intermediate goal. Or like Dhruva Maharaj, he also had an intermediate goal, pretty intermediate. He wanted to become a greater, have his kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma. So these are sometimes intermediate goals, but really in Krishna consciousness we should have the goal of pure bhakti. That should be what inspires us. So how do we become inspired by that particular goal, even though we may not want it at this particular point? We associate with great devotees. So getting back to these Nagaloka and Vijayadharaloka people, their goal was to enjoy the material world. And that's pointed out because they were unhappy because their wives were kidnapped. I mean, if someone is completely Krishna conscious, they'll be aloof from these things. Even if their wives are kidnapped, they'll just chant Hare Krishna. Anyway, so this is one point that we can get out of this particular verse or these verses and purports, that we should fix the goal of Krishna consciousness, have a sankalpa, that means an intention, before we do anything in Krishna consciousness, before we go to Mangalarti, before we go to Guru Puja, before we chant our rounds. You know, what do I want? What am I hoping to achieve? Rather than disconnecting from our goal. And that will help us become Krishna conscious very quickly. All right. So another point Prabhupada makes here in the purport is about the governments today being like Hiranyakashipu's government or Hiranyakashipu's torturing the living entities. And sometimes that's very hard to see. For example, Prabhupada says here, heavy taxation by the government. And some countries, they don't have such heavy taxation. The government arranges for something called inflation, which is actually indirect taxation. And in this way, the people's properties or money becomes worth less and less and less. So even though it's not apparent taxation, it's indirect taxation. So the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement is ultimately to reform society so that we have Krishna conscious governments, Krishna conscious people in charge, as the Bhagavatam states, Tadvag Visargo Janataka Viplavo Yasmin Pratisloka Avalabhachapi Namananan Tasha Yasho Nikatanya Shinvanti Gayanti Grinanti Yat Sarvaha. That this transcendental knowledge, the Bhagavatam, is meant to create a revolution in the lives of an impious civilization. So this is actually our goal in Krishna consciousness, to change society for at least this brief period in the beginning of Kali Yuga, which is supposed to be the golden age. Of course, it doesn't look like it right now. I mean, if you read the news or look at the news on the internet, it appears like things are getting worse. I mean, sometimes people say that to me. Oh, things are a lot worse now. They're getting worse all the time. My mother says that all the time to me. She said, how can you travel to Australia if things are getting worse? I said, don't worry. How can you go to Fiji? Don't worry. How can you go to India? Don't worry. I mean, the material world is always bad. But in Kali Yuga, things get very much worse. And so the point being is that we can turn the tide of this Kali Yuga by presenting this knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam, presenting the process of Krishna consciousness to others. But in order to do that, we have to be pure ourselves. In other words, we have to go back to that sadhana and sadhya. We have to have our goal fixed in our mind to become fit instruments for changing society. That requires good sadhana, that requires stating your intention, it requires avoiding bad association. All these things are easy when you have a goal. And all these things are hard when you don't have a goal. Like controlling the senses, for example. You know, we talk about, Rupa Goswami talks about Vacho Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udarapashta Vegam. Tolerating the pushings of the mind, the tongue, belly, genitals, mind, anger, and words. That's easy if you really are goal-oriented. Because you're fixed on what you want. Or, I mean, sometimes I give the example of good health. Because I, as some of you may remember, I taught a seminar here on once on that was called Stop Killing the Devotees. Because I was very concerned with how devotees are eating themselves to death in many ways. Or their lifestyle is not leading to good health. So people ask me sometimes, you know, how was I able to change my diet? Or how was I able to change my lifestyle? And how can we change our lifestyle? It's a simple thing. You just look at the goal. You want to be healthy, you visualize that, and you go for it. And then everything else falls in place. So whether it's Krishna consciousness or something in this material world for Krishna, we just focus on the goal. Okay, that's all I had to say today. So anyone have any questions? I don't want to go on too long. Questions? Yes.
Yes. I'm just thinking about the goal, and you did mention the highest goal was to surrender to Krishna and worship Krishna.
Oh, love Krishna. Love Krishna. Love Krishna. You know, surrender is the process by which you achieve the goal.
And then I was thinking that one of the understandings could be that this is my highest self-interest.
Yes.
Because we are self-interested. And we want the best for ourselves, even right, though we go astray in that endeavor. And I just thought that would be a good
focus, yeah.
Conscious thought that this ultimately is my highest benefit.
Yes. Well, that's what the Bhagavatam says, that the materialists don't know that. The Tevidhu Swartha Gativi Vishnu, they don't know the highest swartha, interest, self-interest, is to become Krishna conscious. Because obviously, if we become Krishna conscious, we become happy. We don't have to experience the miseries of this life. We can interact with Krishna in a loving way. So, yes, it's the highest goal for us. But one point I wanted to mention is that we may have intermediate goals too. Intermediate goals like just get me out of this material world. Like Prabhupada actually encouraged devotees in the beginning stage to aspire just to get out of the material world. One devotee went to Prabhupada one time and he said to Srila Prabhupada, I just want to serve Krishna life after life. And Prabhupada said, no, you should want to get out of the material world. So the reason is not that we shouldn't want to serve Krishna life after life, but that particular devotee was not at that stage. It was an artificial thing. If you take an artificial goal that you can't resonate with, then it's not going to inspire you. Oh, I'm ready to go to hell to serve Krishna. Is anyone here ready to go to hell to serve Krishna? Raise your hand. I mean, just be honest. I mean, if you're honest, you'll say, no. I'm ready to go to the heavenly planets to serve Krishna. But, you know, hell or even a cold climate? No. I'm not ready to go. Of course, you see great devotees, they're ready to go. Narayana paraksarve nakutashana bibhiti swagapavarga narakeshu apitulyarka darshana. It says the topmost devotee of Narayana. Narayana parayana means that someone who is the topmost devotee who accepts Narayana as the ultimate goal. Then he can go to heaven, hell, liberation, it's all the same to him. Apitulyarka darshana. But for us, you know, we may need some intermediate goal. And therefore we pray or we chant for other intentions that are actually good. Like you may be praying for the welfare of your family. That's an intermediate goal. You may be praying, if you're out distributing books, that someone will have the mentality or the intelligence to take that book of Krishna within his heart and will inspire them. You may be praying for someone's devotee's welfare. You may be praying for compassion, for some good qualities to develop. You may be praying to get rid of the anarthas. You know, if you have any of these anarthas in your heart, if, that's funny, when you have these anarthas in your heart, kama, krodha, lust, kama, krodha, mada, matsarya, varyavaya, lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, fear, and then you pray, Krishna, relieve me of this. Free me from this. Or you may be praying to Krishna to protect you. Pahimam, Rakshamam, as that prayer goes from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishna, 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 hey. Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rakshamam. Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Pahimam. So there, in other words, you should fix goals. If you have your ultimate goal, yes, we become pure devotees. But there's many mileposts in achieving that goal. Mileposts means intermediate goals. So we have to chant and perform our bhakti being inspired from the heart in our activities. So that may mean intermediate goal. Dhruva Maharaj, I gave the example. That was a good intermediate goal. So be honest with Krishna. Don't be dishonest with Krishna. Don't be dishonest with yourself as far as your goals are concerned. Yes, it is our real self-interest to become Krishna conscious. But right now our goal may be to take prasadam. So, so yeah.
You mentioned before that you're going to tell some stories about some nanas. I just wanted
to... Oh, okay, yeah, sorry. Sorry, I forgot about that. Yes, there's a very interesting story about nagas. Actually, two stories about nagas. One is that Queen Kunti was descended from the nagas. Yeah, you may not be aware of that. Yeah, somewhere in the family. I'm not sure where in the family. So what happened, this is, you know, two stories from the Mahabharata, actually, about the Nagas. What happened is that once upon a time, yeah, I forgot to tell the story. Once upon a time, the Kurus, headed up by Duryodhana, and impelled by the nice desires of Shakuni. Everybody knows who Shakuni is? Uncle Shakuni? Mama Shri. So, Shakuni was actually, boy, if I start this, I'll talk forever about it. But anyway, Shakuni was very upset because they had arranged that his dear sister married a blind man. So his whole intention was actually not simply to put Duryodhana on top as the king, but to destroy the whole dynasty. He was a very angry, envious person. So therefore, he came up with this plan to poison Bhimsen. You know, practically all the plans were his, not even Duryodhana's. They were his plans that they schemed. So anyway, so he had this whole plan to poison Duryodhana. They were just kids, Duryodhana, Bhimsen, and the rest of the Pandavas and the Kurus. So he said to Duryodhana, you should invite Bhimsen, make friends with him. Make friends with him. And invite him to this nice cottage on the lake. And tell him you're going to feed him nicely. And Bhimsen was known as Vrikodara. Vrikodara means someone who has a belly of a wolf. In other words, insatiable. That means hunger that can never be stopped. I mean, he would eat anything that was edible. More than his own portion. So they preyed upon his weak point. So they brought him there. Duryodhana brought him there, and he gave him some poison, and he poisoned him with the poison cake, and basically they wrapped his body up and threw him into the river. So he went into the river and went down, 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 and as he went down, 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 the Nagas bit him. So the interesting thing about Bhimsen is that when he got bit by the Nagas, it cured the poison. And then he became, then he went, kept floating down, went down to the Naga kingdom. Somehow or the Naga kingdom, through the water, he was able to enter into the lower regions of the universe. Don't ask me the procedure for doing that because I don't know. But somehow or other, he went down to the lower regions of the universe and he met the king of the Nagas. And the king of the Nagas said, you know, I'm related to you because your mother is related to us. That's not explained in the Mahabharata exactly what the relationship was. But it says, your mother is related to us, so I'm going to give you something really nice to drink. It's called Rasa Kundala, or something like that. Some of you may know that story. And so he gave him this drink, and it made Bhimsen stronger than he was before. He was so strong before that when he was born, his mother dropped him by accident by hearing a loud sound, and he fell down a cliff and he smashed all the rocks. That's how strong his body was. And so then he became even stronger, like 10,000 elephants, it's described in the Mahabharata. And of course he came out of the water and didn't attack the Kurus at that point because his mother said, just keep quiet about the whole affair. So that's one story about the Nagas. Another story involves Arjuna's interaction with the Nagas. Once upon a time, Arjuna intruded upon Yudhisthira and Draupadi when they were alone. And the reason he intruded upon them was that the weapons were kept there and Arjuna had to get the weapons. And Arjuna and the Pandavas had taken a vow that whoever intruded upon their brother when he was with Draupadi would go into exile for a certain number of years. And this vow was to keep peace between the brothers. See, it was very important in the Mahabharata, Krishna's plan, in fact, was that the brothers would always remain united. Very, very important. Narada Muni actually gave the suggestion as far as the vow is concerned. That's why Krishna arranged for all the brothers to marry one wife. Because if the brothers had married different wives, it would have been a disaster. Like you see sometimes, you know, I mean, I'll give you an example of my own brother. My own brother married his wife. Of course, he always marries your wife. Well, nowadays that changes. But anyway, so he married his wife. And his wife won't even let him speak to my mother. He has to get permission from... Anyway, sometimes he has to sneak around. So sometimes, you know, the women don't get along. And so if you had five different wives for five Pandavas, it would have been a disaster. Because, anyway... They wouldn't have been united. It was very important for the Pandavas to function as one. Everybody understands that? Very, very important. As one unit. And that's perhaps one of the most important things. It's not the most important. One of the most important things of the Mahabharata is how they unified and how much brotherly love there was between the brothers. Of course, you're both brothers. Oh, three of you. You have five? Four, char. So anyway, pretty good. And you all love each other? And you're all married to the same wife? That could be arranged. Anyway, so getting back to the point. So Arjuna had to go in exile because he had made that vow and... It was about actually a brahmachari life. He would be a brahmachari for a certain number of years. So he went with a whole group of brahmanas in exile. And they went into the Ganges. They were swimming in the Ganges. Not swimming, but you know, saying their prayers, sorry. Saying their prayers in the Ganges. And all of a sudden, what was that? All of a sudden he feels a tugging on his leg. You know, what is this? And he's, you know, trying to offer his prayers, half submerged into the Ganges. Saying his Gayatri mantra, because Kshatriya has had second initiation, and then he's pulled under the water, poor Arjuna, and pulled down, 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 to the Naga kingdom. And then he says, what's going on? Then he looks and sees who's pulling his leg. Pulling the leg doesn't mean a joke, you know, that's it's a euphemism or expression for joke, but actually pulling the leg, literally. So he looks and he sees this beautiful girl. Her name is Ulupi. And he says, what do you want, lady? And she says, I want you. I want to be married to you. And he says, well, you know, I have a problem. You know, under any other circumstance, it would be all right. But, basically, I've taken a vow of brahmachari life. And she made a very convincing argument She made it very convincing. She said, your vow is only relationship with Draupadi. So, you know, we can get married. And Arjuna, it wasn't hard to convince Arjuna. He just said, all right, Haribo. So, they got married, and as a result, this nice son was born, Chitrangada. That's a story from the Mahabharata. So that's the story of the Nagas, one of the stories I was going to tell. So the Nagas, you know, they're not bad. Even though they're snakes, they're not bad. There's actually some bad snakes and some good snakes. Just like Vasuki, he's a good snake. A bad snake would be, what was that, the name for the Mahabharata? Of course, Takshika, he was a bad snake. Takshika, he's a bad snake. So you have good snakes and bad snakes. It's not all bad in Nagaloka. So that was the story, that's all right? All right, any other questions or comments? Yes?
Just a small comment. You were mentioning being a young man and how you got there. You touched on it. I've heard details on that past one.
Yeah.
It's actually for the Ganga. It's the Ganga flood for the whole universe.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a channel for
that's right.
And another small comment you probably know, that Sri Chaitanya Tantramrita also mentions the Nagas came in the form of human beings and visited the Chaitanya.
Yeah.
They can morph.
Yeah, they can change form. Like Takshika, he changed form too. That's very good. Something about the Nagas. Anyone else have any comments or questions or problems? Yeah.
Can we go back to the class?
Okay.
You mentioned setting goals, Maharaj.
You mentioned what?
Setting goals.
Setting goals, yeah.
It seems like desires and goals are intermixed.
And yeah.
And desires are very much influenced by associations, so they can vary.
I think you answered your own question. Didn't you? You said our desires come from our association. So how do you change the desires? I mean, you answered your question. Change the association. Like Lord Chaitanya, he said when he was asked about the quality of a Vaishnava, he said, a satsanga chag, a Vaishnava chag. The first thing is a Vaishnava gives up bad association. And it's interesting that when we first joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we're very strict about association. I sometimes give this funny example about how I was so strict that I was overly strict. Because I actually, whenever I went to see my mother, I would bring a brahmachari with me to protect me, a bodyguard. You know, because you're not supposed to be alone with a woman, you know, all this strictness like that. So my mother got really upset because this big bodyguard with guns would come. Not guns, I'm just joking about that. So she said, why are you always bringing a brahmachari? And why don't you look at my face? Why do you keep looking at my feet? Because you're Maya. Anyway. So there's this new devotee tendency, which is fanaticism. And it's natural. I think it's natural that new devotees, when you're changing from one style of life to another, will be a little fanatic. But then after a while, we become complacent. Complacent means we become more relaxed in our process of Krishna, too relaxed in our process of Krishna consciousness, because we become encouraged by others who are very loose too. It's like Prabhupada said, he said some of his disciples were monkey disciples. Prabhupada talks about that, you know, they look at each other's faces and encourage each other in sense gratification. So, just like, you know, some devotee would come up and say, Maharaj, you're just so strict. Why don't you go to the movies? Why don't you eat chips, you know, buy chips from the store? Why don't you do this? You know, it's not natural what you're doing. And so by that association, we gradually become less and less strict in Krishna consciousness. And you see this, you know, we were very, devotees are very strict in rising early in the morning. After a while, they get into late night programs. I see this all the time. As far as the morning is not so important anymore, although Prabhupada stressed the morning. I mean, I was with Prabhupada one time, Mexico City. Prabhupada did a program, ended up at about 11 o'clock at night. Nobody got to sleep at 12. Nobody woke up for Mangalarti except for Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was really angry. He's really angry with the devotees. And so, So anyway, so after some time, then we start to emphasize the night, because the night is a time for fun, right? Fun. And that's not really what Prabhupada taught. Prabhupada taught the morning is the time for fun. And the night, you know, time for preaching, doing other things like that, and obviously taking rest at a decent time, so you could wake up at a decent time in the morning. So we just become very lax after some time. Through association that's not so helpful. So the idea is we keep good association, and then we don't become lax. Does that answer your question? Why the desires change? And you know, just like if you watch, like some of our people from India, if you watch a Bollywood movie means like some nasty romantic movie. Imitation of Krishna's rasa dance. So one time I watched a Bollywood movie. I was in the airport, and there was some young couple in the Bollywood movie, and then there was a whole bunch of dancers that danced around them, and I thought, oh, it's like a rasa dance. So if you watch those, if you do those things, or even we were talking the other day, actually yesterday, about rugby games. Like if you watch a rugby game, I'm not criticizing anyone, but maybe I am. But if you watch a game, and then you get into the same mood as the players. If you ever watch someone who's watching the game, they start to grunt. That means they're the modes of nature, karnam guna sangasya sarasajan majonishu, are actually affecting their consciousness. So in other words, if we're strict, I mean, obviously during the day we may have some job or we have to associate this and that. If you're working in a factory or whatever, you're associating with people who may not be of the highest modes of nature. But still, Krishna will protect you. But if in the times when we have some discrimination or choice, if we choose the lower modes of nature, we choose association that will water down our Krishna consciousness, then our desires change. So it's all a question of association, which you pointed out nicely in your question. The question, it was a rhetorical question, yes. Kishore, you have a question?
Just wondering, like, there's this term going around, it's called Windians.
Who?
Windians, it's called.
Windians,
like Indians with a W in front.
Oh, Windians.
Yeah. You aware of that?
What?
Are you aware of the...
No, I've never heard of that.
Oh, it's like...
Western Indians?
Yes, exactly. Who have, developed all these externals. The eating chili and dressing in a particular way.
What's wrong with chili? I like chili.
Oh, yeah, but like take a...
Prabhupada liked chili also. Prabhupada would make chutney, and it was so hot, it would burn your throat. I remember the first time I took Prabhupada's chutney, I had to run to the bathroom and throw water over my head or something like that. There's nothing wrong with chili. Please don't criticize chili. It's an offense. Use an example. All right.
Yeah, but like in the same way, we see that in the Krishna conscious movement, there are lots of devotees who have got lots of external things. What's the best, but like not necessarily love of Godhead, and there are the...
That's called Nimagraha. Yeah.
Right. How can we sort of not be judgmental, but how should we deal with people like
lovingly, that? Not with condemning. Oh, you're a ritualistic.
Like, why I'm saying this because, yeah. I suppose I'm Indian, and like, you know.
No, you're not. You're a spirit soul.
But you know, and I look at them and I think that's not even part of Krishna consciousness. Like, you know, like I think, like we don't do that. Like, you know, for example, having a sari on all day while at home, like, I never do that being Indian, but whereas a Westerner might have a sari on all day and even wear a sari to the...
Are you talking about externals?
Externals, yes.
Okay, that's a whole Krishna West discussion.
Yeah, but how do you sort of relate to that, like...
I never wear a sari. That's how I do it. All right, I know his questions, yes.
Could you explain the question?
Well, I suppose the question I'm asking is, personally, it's a personal question, that how should I relate to somebody who has, like, lovingly, yes, but who has got all these externals, but, you know, like, I personally feel like like, no, we should be like doing this instead and not really...
Yeah, but you can't. You have to show a good example. People are on different platforms of devotional service. And many people need those externals just to be stable. It's just, you know, they don't have the internal life developed. So to them, if you take away the externals, then you take away their Krishna consciousness. So that's, you know, many people are on that level. You know, if you take away the dhoti, that means, I mean, there's this whole thing about dhotis, you know, they call dhotis spiritual dress, but actually dhotis are not spiritual dress, they're just a cultural dress, whether you know it or not. But it's sometimes good to have some means of identification within a certain group. You know, practically any group, they have certain types of dress, a way of acting, or shaking hands, or whatever. I remember in the old days, we would shake hands in a certain way that identified you as a group member. You know, fist bumps, or... Yeah, or what is that? Exploding fist bumps, I guess. Or, you know, certain signs. So having those external things is not necessarily bad. And many people are dependent psychologically on those external things. And they can't picture Krishna consciousness without a dhoti or a sari. So we should be compassionate. And as they practice, they will come to a higher level of Krishna consciousness. So then you can't, if you take away someone's pacifier, you know, like a baby, sometimes they have a pacifier. Pacifier means something that is there instead of the milk, instead of the mother. You take away, they start crying. So you have to let them have that particular crutch. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
So also Maharaj probably explains too that wearing the traditional Vedic dress,
yeah.
Let's say spiritual dress, but wearing
yeah.
traditional Vedic dress,
yeah.
It marks us out. Just like a priest
exactly.
wears a collar. So someone will see a person wearing tilak, wearing traditional dress, and they'll think, oh, this is a person who perhaps I can inquire about spiritual
yes.
dress. So I wouldn't go so far, but forgive me for disagreeing.
No, that's all right.
But I wouldn't go so far to say that it's a crutch. I think it's important that we continue Prabhupada's...
Right.
You know, Prabhupada didn't tell us to wear saris and dhotis, but
yeah.
when we start wearing saris and dhotis, he endorsed it. So I think it's I'm not saying that a devotee has to wear a sari all day or all day, but when they're around the temple, when they're representing the
yes.
religion, I mean, when certainly. I'm at home, I put my daggers, tracky dacks, my oldest t-shirt, because I'm just at home. But, you know, if, when I come to the temple or if I'm going somewhere where it's clear that I'm representing, of course, in one way we should always be representing
right.
Prabhupada, but if you get my point,
yep.
But you know, I naturally lean towards wearing traditional
yeah.
dress.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. My comment about crutch is it not that the dress is a crutch, but for certain people, they may fully identify Krishna consciousness with the dress. For them, it's a crutch. Certain people may think that unless you're wearing a dhoti or sari, you're not Krishna conscious. That was my comment. I should have clarified that. But it's not a crutch. I mean, it's actually a way of preaching that you presented very nicely. The people will see that we're spiritual people and they'll be attracted. Obviously, I mean, devotees should dress such a way that people can identify us as devotees of Krishna. But for certain people, they can't separate the dress internally in their mind, and for them, that's a crutch.
That was my question.
Yeah, that was there. But not everybody. It's not that, you know, I'm dressing a dhoti because it's my crutch. I'm dressing a dhoti because I agree to follow the tradition, and I like the dress. You know, Prabhupada said, you know, it's simple. It's very, you don't have to worry about styles, and no different styles of dhotis. Of course, sorry, there are. And it identifies me. It helps me maintain a sense of identification. It attracts people. There's so many reasons. And it pleases Krishna. You know, it pleases Krishna. So there's so many reasons apart from that. But for some people, they can't visualize Krishna consciousness outside of the dress. In other words, they'll go to sleep with their dhoti on. Because, you know, they're afraid if they die in the middle of the night and they're not wearing a dhoti, they're not going back to Kathmandu. You know, God forbid they're wearing, what do you call it, pajamas here, is it? You know, if they're wearing shorts or pajamas, or maybe they'll even go swimming in their dhoti. In case, you know, in case they die drowning, they, you know. I'm being a little exaggerating, of course, about the whole thing. But, you know, but that sort of consciousness is a crutch. You know, like if you're in the hospital, you know, insist upon wearing your dhoti in the operating room, it's not going to work. So.
But that's exactly what I meant. Like,
yeah.
Like when I talk to someone like that, should I tell them?
No. No. You encourage people to enter into the holy and the positive thing. You never want to deal with negatives with people. Oh, you're just attached to the externals. You know, you want to explain to them how to chant Hare Krishna, enter into a higher state, talk about the goal of Krishna consciousness, developing your internal, your rasa with Krishna. In this way, you know, people come to a higher platform. I mean, that's the point. I mean, I'm not going to talk about the Krishna West type of question right now, because that would, it's not appropriate. So, any other questions or comments? Yeah.
I was just going to say, I'm actually surprised that Kishori's Nandaji is shaping the question that way. Around here, I would say it's more convincing people to put on a sign.
Well, that's funny. Because it may not apply to here. It may apply. See, she's dealing with people from physical, bodily forms from India. And it tends to be very ritualistic. Like in Fiji, for example, it's very ritualistic. I mean, and they're scared of changing things, not only with the dress, but with their demigod worship, with all sorts of rituals, you know, that you have to do. And I mean, like every time they yawn, they have to snap their fingers lest the ghost take their soul away. You ever heard about that one before? I mean, I had one friend. I didn't know about this before, but he was snapping his fingers every time he yawned. I thought he was hungry. I said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "And he says, you know, the ghosts will take my soul or something, and he said, will haunt me." And I said, "It looks weird. You know, you're out in public. You know, giving a lecture." So her background, I mean, at least the culture she came from, is very, very ritualistic culture, where people are very much attached to, you know, all sorts of things, not just the dress, and that's what the comment was based on.
Yeah. And also here, like, Westerners are afraid.
Because Windians.
Yeah. Like, Westerners are afraid to take up Krishna consciousness because of the externals, they worry
about. That's the Krishna West question.
Yeah.
That, you know, sometimes we have to, I mean, like, you have the Loft program here.
Yeah.
You know, you have the Loft, you have Krishna West. And we have other programs, Krishna Lounge, Krishna this, Krishna that. And these are all ways of introducing people to Krishna. We don't want to give them too much of a shock in the beginning, you know, that you have to shave your head to be Krishna conscious.
Gently.
What's that?
Gently,
you know, it's a, in like a pin, out like a plow. You know, so... These are different means. These are bridge programs, different means of attracting people to Krishna consciousness, which is effective. I mean, it took me an extra 3 or 4 years to join the movement because of the externals.
Yes, black and white, in or out.
Yeah, in or out.
No gray areas of that.
Yeah, the first time I came to the temple, you know, they told me I wasn't qualified to read Prabhupada's books. I wanted to read the Isopanishad, and they told me, you know, you have to hear from me. You can't read this book until you hear from me. And then, I mean, it was very fanatic. I told the story on the internet. There's so many videos about this. You know, you couldn't use toilet paper. You know, for someone who just comes to the movement, just visiting the temple, you can't use toilet paper. You have to stand on the toilet. I was thinking, how do you stand on it without falling in? You know, it's just like, those externals don't need to be presented to people, and they keep people from coming.
One of them, I just must say this, was, your son is not a devotee, you do not speak to him. And I didn't speak to my son for 4 years.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Let's get real, you know. This is what black and white's in or out. You don't talk to your kid who's not a developer.
Well,
and silly, the silly person.
Yeah.
Except so stupid, accepted it. And we didn't speak for 4 years.
Oh my God. Yeah, so basically we have to be very compassionate with people. Get them to chant the holy name. Be positive. Be positive, I mean. Anyway, so yeah, like it took me 2 or 3 extra years. I came in contact with Krishna Consciousness in 1968, and I didn't join until 71. Because of that. I mean, the devotees just burnt me. And I went to a class, and the devotees told me I was going to the Yamadutas, or Yama. Kali Yuga was coming. I was going to be as short as a dwarf, living underground, eating other people. The she-jackals were vomiting fire. I said, get me out of here. You know, and I avoided devotees for 2 or 3 years. The only thing that kept me, that brought me to Krishna consciousness was Prabhupada. You know, I met Prabhupada, and then I thought, that's it. You know, I have to do something I don't want to do. Just shave my head, put on dhoti and everything, and go out in public. And I mean, it was hard. It was definitely an austerity. And wake up early, all these other things. So we should present Krishna consciousness gradually to people, and then they'll take the whole process. I mean, even as a Westerner, the deities were shocking to me. It was very shocking. Because from a Judeo-Christian background, you have these 10 commandments about not worshipping graven images. And you know, you don't really understand what the deities are. And it's just like, go into a temple and people jumping up and down and running around a bush and bowing down to a bush. It's like that movie Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, you know, basically from a person's perspective, an outsider's perspective. So we have to be sensitive to people's, yeah, you know, just people's states and what they can accept, what they can't accept. So we have this very successful program called Krishna West, and we have like 30 college students now chanting japa. About 20 or 30 college students chanting japa just by introducing gradually Krishna consciousness. You know, what we do is we read from Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, and then you silently meditate on the meaning of the Bhagavad Gita. It's not silent, impersonal meditation. Some people thought that. You silently meditate on what we just read. And they're becoming Krishna conscious. It's amazing how many people are just attracted to Prabhupada's movement. By friendship, love, and a gradual presentation of Krishna consciousness. Somewhat like the LOC program, you know, very similar to that. So, I guess we should end now. It's time for prasadam. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Beer. So everything all right?
Yes,
Tamasaki. Very good. You're teaching today, right? Is it a holiday or are you teaching?
It's Easter holiday.
Oh, it's still Easter on Tuesday.
Yeah, we have 2 week Easter holiday.
Oh, good.
Because we just ended term one.
Yeah.
And term two started. Otherwise, I would have written to you because I thought it would have been still great if you had come to the school.
Too bad.
So it just ended last Thursday.
Do you like teaching here? Or?
It's nice.
It's good.
It's definitely challenging.
Not even.
It's definitely there's some challenges, and we were hoping to maybe find some time with you.
Yeah.
To ask a few questions.
We have plenty of time. Plenty of time.
we
Most of the challenges are probably the parents rather than the kids.
Yeah.
That's what I hear in every Gurukula. You know, what's the challenge? Oh, it's the parents.